charge of that. I always take longer to review than I should, but maybe it'll help you. This is the last day. But I want to show you where we've been. We started Monday by looking at the creation, the fact that men and women had roles, unique characteristics, created as different kinds of people, all new to God, in the beginning before the fall. But the fall came and intensified many of the problems, well, what made problems in the world, and they become intensified. And things that were created good could become sources of temptation. And so we begin to look at the male character. On Tuesday, we looked and said, well, a lot of the things that are unique about men, you might say not bad or good, but they become special temptation. Remember that? We even looked at all the criminals, and mostly men, right? And we looked at the different ways in which our egos, or our desire to conquer, our desire to control, our desire to win, all those things can create unique temptations and make us really evil. I mean, scary evil, right? And we even looked at macho men in the Bible that made pretty bad messes of things. But we ended with this kind of like big question mark over our heads. Well, if men are like that, why does God make them leaders? Which he does, right? All through the old New Testament. So the answer, of course, one answer is, yes, but those leaders are supposed to develop certain qualities and characteristics. In many cases, he lists what they are, right? And so we can look at that and see, well, okay, then I have to change, control, discipline, direct my qualities as a man to be ready for that leadership, to be competent in that, right? So we started to look at that, look at some of the duties in God's plan. And then we also looked at what are the duties that are given to fathers in particular in God's plan. We looked at that. And there's some verses that say, fathers do this, right? Bring up your children, their admonition, Lord, and some things like that. And the problem with that, not the problem, but the shortcoming in that is that we really hardly have any perfect human fathers, right? No matter how hard we try, we're just going to fall short of that. And so the real punchline was yesterday, and who is the real pattern of fatherhood that we have to look at?
God.
It has to be God. And now, we have fathers of our flesh, hence the title of this course, that we look at. We will aspire to be that one day, in 30, 20 years, something like that. You guys will be in that situation, maybe sooner, especially thinking about teenage boys and girls, too. But God's the example we have to look at. And maybe I should have spent 2 days on that, because, you know, I had that huge list, but there were three kind of groups of things about God. One was up here in the upper left, which was his intrinsic quality, his pure character, right? What he is, right? Not what he does yet, but... And I think that's the most important thing for us to aspire to. And then, if you remember those yellow things, oh, I think I maybe have a... Did I put it in here? No, I didn't. It's in the end. But those yellow things, which is, he is outward directed. He is benevolent. He is sacrificial. He thinks about us. He loves us. His actions are all motivated for our benefit. You see that with that other area. That's the next thing you have to work on real hard in this fallen world. And then the third area was competence. Remember that? Not only is he well-intentioned, not only is he a good guy, he also can do it. All-powerful, all-knowledgeable. When he says something, he can make it happen. And as fathers and dads, we got to work on those things too. Our knowledge, our skills, our courage, other things that will give us the capability to do those sacrificial things, expressions of our great character. Okay, is that a good review? Have I waved my arms enough to... y'all remember what all we've done? Well, that's kind of the idea. And... You know, again, our text here is about the fact that here's imperfect human fathers. We respect them. They do their best. But how much more our perfect heavenly Father, who chastens us for our profit and to make us partakers of his holiness, right? And that's the idea. All right, so today, I maybe should spend two class periods on all of those. There's lots you can do this. But instead, my goal as a teacher is kind of based on the Matthew version of the... Great Commission, where Matthew says, go to make disciples of all the nations. Okay, if you're a disciple, what are you? You're a learner, right? You're the guy in the karate class, and the sensei says you do it, right? When you try to practice a disciple, he says, teaching them to observe. That means do something. Observe, right? Practice. So I want you to be different, and I want you to change your life somehow. I want you to do something different, and I want you to believe something. So our goals were these. I hope I've changed your life in this way. Here's what I want you to do or think or believe differently. Do y'all believe more deeply in the harmful effects of the fall? Maybe just review the facts, but it surely is something that ought to motivate us, frighten us maybe even to do the right. Be watchful for when me as a man begin to express those things that are unique about me in sinful ways. When I'm too pride, I'm too egocentric, right? By the way, somebody was telling me there was like a push-up contest going on. Is that true?
Yes.
I have a question. This is the question you ever told me that. You think there's going to be a push-up contest next week at the Dove Camp? What are the chances of that? Anyway, sorry. Point made, right? You get the idea.
Yeah.
Right? All right. So, but you know what? You can kind of be proud of your push-up capability, right? And kind of go to let that kind of get out of hand. Let's be watchful for that. And actually think about ways in which our courage, our cleverness, our desire to win, our desire to conquer gets directed towards Satan and the powers of evil and the things in our life that we really do need to have control and dominate. Okay, qualify ourselves for these God-given leadership roles. Remember, I'm imperfect. I'm dangerous. When I get loose without any kind of self, I'm dangerous. I can do harm. But I need to qualify myself to be a leader in the ways God has said, including Father. I hope you feel that way. And so you got to look and say, well, where am I falling short? That's what we're trying to do today. Look at the qualities of God. Tried to do that yesterday. And continue. I was just having a conversation about the kind of the transcendence of God. What was the phrase he used? That God is not contingent. That's an interesting thought thing. He doesn't depend on anything. He's not on his way to something. Anyway, look at that. And of course, God does call on us to be like him in the ways that he expresses himself toward us. And this is today. I want you to develop the skill to strength. So get your lesson sheets out. And this is part A of the lesson. We're going to spend most of the time going through this. And I'll just warn you, I've used similar material for men who are husbands and fathers. And so I've tried to go through this survey and kind of suit it so none of you are fathers, right? So are not married. Maybe some of you are. But the point is I've tried to make it more suitable to where you are in your life. And I think some of these will apply. Some of them may be a stretch. You haven't quite experienced them, but I think it'll work out. You all right with that? Okay. Male challenge. Are you ready?
Yep.
Here's the challenge. So you're going to fill this out. You're going to circle yes, no, or seldom, always, never, something like that. Here's my challenge. If you're really a man, find somebody that knows you very well and let them fill it out about you. Okay. I'm serious about that. It might be a parent or a sibling, you know, unless you don't want to take advantage of you somehow or another. But a good friend that you know, say, hey, is this what, when you think of me, what do you think? Don't show them your answers first, right? So that leads to a dilemma. If you write on the sheet, which I want you to, how are you going to have them do the thing? So I got my son to go make extra copies of this page. So if you want, or if you're ready to take the challenge, you can have a free copy of Friday, a lesson Friday. And then you can use that for other people. Is that important to ask other people? How am I doing? What do you see in me? You know, oh man, I think so. One of the great values of having a wife and a relationship with your wife so that she can tell you what she's thinking. She's not afraid of you and can be honest about how you're coming across. And that should be something you reward, praise, value in your wife if she's willing to do that. Okay, let's do it. You all okay with this? You see where we're going?
Yes, sir.
So in this score sheet, you'll notice that 0 is kind of like the bad side, 3 is the good side, all right? And so as a result of that, I had to change the words in here to go sometimes from always to never and then never to always. But still, left is not... What's that?
I think it was extra copies.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I was just going to make them available. Here, pass them around whoever wants them. See, now you're going to have to prove you're a man by taking one, aren't you? Okay. Again, I am so full of self-doubt. I'm not manly in that respect. I hope this is good use of the time, right? We can keep studying the Bible text, but we got to stop at the end of the day and in the week and say, what am I doing? What can I do? All right, number one. Are you known by Christians and worldly people? That's two different groups, by the way, right? Christians as well as worldly people in your life for your holiness. And I went on to define that, your separation from worldly thoughts and things. I'm going to think about each one of you. What would that look like? I'll start off. So if there's an off-color story that's about to be told, how do you react to that? You're in a worldly environment, right? School or work or somewhere. Do people notice? You see, I'm not asking you, are you? I'm saying, are you known by your behavior, by your outward manifestation? I don't like that. People know that you don't cuss. In fact, they kind of don't think you want them to cuss around them. They might even control their language. You see what I mean? You're known for that. You see what I'm getting at there? So just keeping quiet or moving to the back of the room or something, that you might get an occasionally out of that, but maybe not an often, right? And am I always known by Christians and non-Christians for a behavior that stands out for holiness? With me? Can we do the nod exercise? Thank you. Okay. Number two, are you boastful of questionable, sinful past activities? It's an interesting passage in Romans that I had on the lesson yesterday. I didn't really look at it. But it's like somebody might challenge God. I don't think you did the right thing with regard to the nation of Israel. And Paul said, oh no, God always does the right thing in the past and in the present and in the future, right? And my question is, are you known, are you ever kind of like backhandedly boastful for all the bad things you used to do, right? Now, I'm not talking about learning lessons and teaching lessons from your past where you've made mistakes. But I'm talking about being a little bit proud of, yeah, when I was a kid, I had my wild side, sowed the wild oats, you know, did this and that. Does that ever happen? Think about that. Or something, even things that really maybe not necessarily explicitly sinful, but they're just not the best behavior for a Christian, and you're kind of proud of it. The little trouble I got, the prank I pulled, how you made somebody look bad, those kind of things are just questionable, but you're kind of proud of that. That's maybe what you're known for. That would give you a zero, by the way, if you're often doing that kind of thing. If you never do it, that would give you a three. So. Number three. Oh, by the way, I meant to say, move apart from each other, right? I don't want anybody copying each other's paper. No, actually, I don't want you looking on each other's paper. So keep this private. This needs to be a personal assessment. Did we hand all those spare copies out?
No.
Did you hand them all out?
The rest.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I still got one more class to go.
Sure. You still skipped me.
All right.
You still want one?
I hate to be stingy, but it's hard to copy. All right, let's keep going. Number three. Do you initiate and lead prayers among your peers? I hope you're remembering verses that these come from, right? Where we studied this, right? 1 Timothy 2, I desire the men lift up holy hands, in prayer. And really, in my last class, I thought it was a very good comment. One of the guys said, well, does it have to be just prayer? I mean, what if, you initiate Bible studies? I said, okay, I'm with you. You got it, okay? But the point is, you're the guy that initiates spiritual discussions, right? In a situation that's either stressful or it's an appropriate time to think about spiritual things, are you the one that steps up and says, I know what we can do, and I'll take the leadership to do that, right? And so the answer is always, often, okay, you see where we're going? Nodding exercise, please. Okay, too slow, probably. Do you lose your temper, number four, make threats or act rashly to defend your rights or to make people give you respect? To defend your reputation or your manhood or something like that, right? And I guess I'm asking here, are you in control of your emotions? And temper can be expressed in various ways, right? Sometimes it's just yelling and cursing. Sometimes it's physical. Sometimes it's more of an insulting thing where you're not really angry or whatever. But, you carry that around, finding a way to express it. Yeah.
Is the first one the only one that we're supposed to answer in terms of what other people would think of if they were answering it for us, or does that apply to all of us?
That's a great question. I don't know. We'll have to read them and see. I mean, I wrote these, but I didn't think of it from that point of view. Because, part of the challenge is you are going to have somebody else fill it out according to what they think of you. So there's, I don't know.
So probably just what we think.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, yes, this is your personal assessment.
Think about, oh.
Right, as honestly as you can. Okay, thank you. I've confused everybody, my bad.
Thank you.
No, this is your private, and, you know, don't look on anybody's paper, your private assessment. And I, you know, I don't do this enough, you know, I mean, stop taking it. And then, part two, the male challenge is, somebody else is going to come and fill this out and see if they agree with that, what you think of yourself. Can I say that? All right, you get angry, number four. Let's go to number five. Can you tolerate insults or ridicule without anger or a desire for revenge? And rather, instead of that, respond with kindness. Boy, I remember junior high being tough. And ridicule was a primary weapon of the middle schoolers, it seemed to me, right? Because they could hurt you bad. And they seemed to know how to do it, you know. Whatever little flaw, you just sense what you were embarrassed about or what you were sensitive about. And that was a... So my question is, can you tolerate that and not kind of be resentful or think about how to get revenge? But even more of a challenge, respond with kindness, a kind word of calmness. You ever heard of anybody that when he reviled not again? And when he suffered, he threatened not? You ever heard of such a person as that?
So when it comes to the tolerate insults, what about those of us who we have been insulted or whatever,
yeah.
So we learn to grow from it,
yeah.
But not in the best way possible, so rather like learn to hide it better.
Sure. And so that's why I put respond with kindness. Isn't that the challenge Jesus gives us? Yeah, maybe we can keep quiet. Maybe we can stay calm. Maybe we can just get into the background somehow.
Right.
But boy, what a challenge to turn around and speak kindly or do the favor.
What I mean is, like, let's say, like, somebody, no offense to nobody, but somebody's like, oh, you know, fat.
Yeah.
And then that guy, instead of losing weight, hides under more clothing.
Or something like that.
To not be called fat.
Yeah. I'm really thinking more about the emotional reaction. You know, do we strike back? Are we angry? Or do we respond in kindness? And it could be for a real thing, or maybe for something that's imaginary. Yeah.
How do you respond with kindness? Can you give an example?
Sure. I think you could respond with a compliment back to the person, right? Rather than kind of never want to be around that person, do something that would be helpful to them. Maybe a small act, just to show you're neither afraid nor offended. Right, you can deal with that.
I thought you meant like saying something back. That is kind.
That'd be cool. That'd be a nice judo move, I think. Yeah.
If somebody calls me dumb, I'll be like, that may be true. Well, how about you teach me your way so I can be
or
smart
yeah.
like you?
Yeah. Unless you knew that too sarcastic.
That rhymes. I mean, that is sarcastic, but It's clever. It works.
Yeah. Oh, I think it's such a great strength to be able to just let insults just not have any effect. It actually motivates to be more calm and more peaceful and more pleasant. And I don't know that I could ever do that. But you know what I mean? Boy, what a powerful strength to be. Exercise it is to do.
What would that be considered? Would that be considered?
It might be considered weakness on the part of those that listen. So I think it's an always, right? Oh, I'm sorry, let me read it. Which is it here?
We tolerate no problem.
Thank you.
Because you're not
yeah, always. Yeah, always would be the best. I can respond in kindness and tolerate. Yes.
Are we allowed to go between the boxes?
Yeah, sure. But I'll tell you a hint about these surveys. I really made four boxes instead of five, because if I made five, guess which one people would mostly pick?
No.
And I'm kind of forcing you to kind of say, no, I'm not as good at that, or, you know, I am good at it. You know what I mean? You got to kind of
split the middle.
So if you're split in the middle, you're kind of defeating your purpose. You're
putting five, four. Middle box is sometimes, right? Five
yes, right, right. And I always, when I do those surveys, I'm thinking, that's non-committal. I'm not really, you know, thinking a lot about that. That's the easy one. Or when they have 10, I mean, I don't, what's in between 6 and 7? About 6, do you struggle emotionally when you lose in a competition? In any kind of competition, it could be a low test score, it could be a, you know, just an ordinary game, whatever. And the other side of that is, are you overly exuberant when you win? Right, so it's real important to you to win or lose. And it kind of shows up in your emotion and maybe in your mood, right? So you lost, and it ought not to matter that much. Number seven, do you have life habits that crowd out spiritual activities which you cannot control? I don't mean the spiritual activity you can't control. I mean the habits you can't control, right? That you can't do without them. Can you give me an example? Something that's a habit in your life that kind of crowds out good things that you can't hardly stop once you start?
Sports?
Could be. Video games is what comes to my mind, right? But I think anymore, texting or those kind of things where, I don't know if this is a guy problem. Y'all text as much as girls do?
Well, would they text as
much? Yeah. Anyway, it just seems to me that we are in danger. If it's not that, it's something else. So I'm asking you this question. Look at your day. Count the minutes that you spend in an activity, right? You end up spending more time with something you intended to, and it's not really a great spiritual thing. It's difficult to quit. You know, when I was a kid, it's like watching too much TV or something, right? Now it's probably other things. That's the question. Number seven. Number eight, you keep commitments, meet deadlines, follow instructions from those in authority without resentment. And that's similar to God's quality. When he says something's going to happen, it happens. Right? And you can imagine as a dad, if you make a promise, you want to make that come to pass. So practice now. Develop that skill. Are you someone who says, yeah, I'll get that done, and about half the time you actually do it, right? Well, that's not the best. So the idea would be to be good, be honest in the sense of making a commitment you can keep, but also making it come to pass when you did it. Number nine, are you deceptive or conniving? Y'all know conniving? Tricky? To gain advantage, to get your way, to build your reputation, make others look up. You ever tell a story and you're always the hero, you know? Like, he said this, but I said this. And that's not exactly quite how it happened, but boy, you can tell it the right way and it makes you look pretty good. You know what I mean? Or you hide a few details that probably are not so great about you in the story, those kind of things. Just because we want to look good, right? That happens. So my question is, do you use sometimes the twisting the truth to gain some advantage, keep from looking bad, build your reputation, or even worse, to make others look bad, I suppose in the assumption that it helps you look bad. Okay, number 10. By the way, stop me at any time. You guys have asked really good questions about the knucklehead that wrote these. Yeah. Do you take care to ensure that nothing you do can be misconstrued by anyone as sinful or motivated by evil? Now, that's a different question from if you ever do anything wrong. Do you understand the difference in that? I think Paul said in Romans, take thought, how does it go? To be honorable in the sight of all men, something like that. Right? Or things honorable in the sight of all men. The idea is, you might not be off to do something bad, but somehow or another, the way it looks, or the way it's described, or where you are, or how long it took, or who you're with unescorted, or whatever it is, looks bad. Even though you could argue, and we often do, there's nothing wrong, that's a kind of argument. It's not wrong. This is my favorite. I will teach you this if we have more time. Would you say this with me? In and of itself. You ever heard that expression? As if there was anything in the world that's in and of itself. There's a larger world. People watch what you do. They have impressions about what you do, right? And even if something's okay, ready?
In and of itself.
That's kind of our little ticket, free ticket, to say, well, there's nothing wrong with, okay, widen your view. What does it look like, right? You see what I'm getting at. So that's my question is, do you think about those thoughts? So there's an interesting twist on the question. I'm not asking you, do you ever look bad? I'm asking you, do you think about it? Right? You try to take care that you look righteous, even in things that are okay but might be right or not. You okay with that? That's the point of the question. Do you think about it? Do you care? Number 11. Do you use insults or profanity? Or the opposite, maybe, but still the same reaction. Become withdrawn and sullen. There's another word for that, pout, right? When you're not pleased with something, you know, something doesn't go your way, okay? And I know that you're all, a lot of you, most of you still at home, and so your interaction with your parents is probably the best gauge of that right now. You ever get angry when you wanted to do something and you can't? You wanted something and you can't have it, right? Or there's bad news and you didn't really want that to happen, so you're angry or you pout or you are sullen in some way. That's my question. Number 11. Number 12. This one may be hard for you. This comes from maybe an older in session, but I think you can get it. Do you discount the insecurities, fears, and emotions in others, including females, as a weakness? Right? Maybe you haven't all had to deal with this, but you know, women cry sometimes. They sometimes cry a lot. And there's a reason. And it's not a bad thing. And often we can learn from that if we're actually sensitive enough to understand. But sometimes we just discount it as like weakness, as silly. Can't you control yourself? And you might actually look at other guys who have an emotional side, which might be a strength in their part from the standpoint of character. Say, that guy's a weakling. He's a sissy. He's whatever. That's not it. So I'm asking you, do you ever discount that kind of if somebody's afraid of something, they're insecure, they're sad, whatever the emotion is, and you discount that as a weakness looking at other people? Do you ever act? Number 13. Are others ever reluctant to approach you because of how you might react? Now, I'm back to that question that I didn't know the answer to. This is a little bit of a perception of others of you, right? It's kind of on the outside looking in. But is it possible that you might be scary and unapproachable and you maybe don't appreciate that? Yeah, I think it is. So that was maybe hard to know for sure, but I think you should think about it. Are you easily... what is it, James? Is it the wisdom that's from above says easy to entreat? I think that's where that is, right? I'm not scary. I really am not. Come talk to me. I'm not going to eat you up. Is that your character? Are you likely to either insult someone or get angry with them?
Pardon?
Yes.
Does that also have to do with like receiving correction? Like maybe somebody is thoughtful. Like, I probably don't want to. Maybe point out something to him because he's probably going to be really upset about it.
Yeah,
following that category.
Great comment. I wasn't thinking that, but it surely is. And if I'm not approachable on other things, how approachable am I going to be when somebody has a criticism or a correction? That's good. That's good. And so that might fit in some of the others where somebody's coming to give me bad news and I get angry about it too. So. Thank you. Number 14, are you easily provoked to anger towards someone or criticism of others who deny your request or cause inconvenience? That kind of falls in that category, right? You come to me, I'll strike back somehow. Criticize you, get angry. I'll show you that you should never do that again, whatever it is you just did, right? And is that the way you respond? I hate to even mention this, but actually your behavior toward brothers and sisters might be the best test of this, right? If you're in a multi-kid family at some point. So 14, 15, do you respond kindly to ignorance, social awkwardness, immaturity, or incompetence that's seen in others? I don't see my son here. I have a couple of sons that is the thing I wouldn't say most proud of, but I'm just amazed that if there's a crowd and there's some awkward people, y'all know what I'm talking about, they will be... you know, kind of at their side, or, you know, we'll make an effort. And my question is, are you like that? Can you look around the room and say, that guy's struggling a little bit, or this person's awkward, this person probably is not going to end up with a bunch of friends just based on their odd personality, and we all have it. And so I'm gonna fix that. I'm going to make sure that they have a friend, or they get help, or whatever. That's my question in 15. And, you know, we're all different, and we all need to show that love and openness to others. Anyway, so that's number 15. By the way, those boys got it from their mom. I don't know where they got it. Anything? Number 16. Are you eager to forgive others who have wronged you so that they know you don't hold a grudge toward them? We had a good discussion on this in the last call. Maybe shorten the discussion here a little bit, but you know, sometimes you don't know for sure if somebody's mad at you or not. Did that ever happen? Like, Or they don't know if you're mad at them or not. That happens a lot, even when you're married, maybe especially when you're married, right? Whose responsibility is it as a leader to fix that, whichever way it is? Who's supposed to take the initiative? Right, especially in a family, right? A father and a husband. If there's something going on, and a lot of times with women, you know there's something going on, but you don't know what it is, right? This, whose responsibility is to fix it? Or you say, well, when she comes to her senses and apologizes, I'm ready to help, you know. Oh, no, that's not the way it works. You're the guy that, and, you know, Matthew 18 says you go to the brother, you know, and you try to sort that out. Anyway, that's the question. Are y'all catching on to all of these? And if these are not challenging enough, I suggest you go back one page and look at those qualities of God again. And start, you make up your own questions, really, relating to those things about God that are perfect in every way. Okay? All right, you got that? So, look at it. Now, what I want you to do with these is, don't just look at it and say, well, I scored a 30, or I don't know, you know. Or maybe we should compare scores and see who won.
No, that's not it. I scored 89.
Yeah. Well, I scored 50, max 48, right? So. So this is my challenge. This is my macho male, are you brave enough challenge here. But I think if there's some of these that are in the 0 to 1 category, I think there maybe needs to be some confession and repentance. And maybe it's just something I could do better at, but still, I think you still go to God and say, God, I can do better at this. Please help me. You know, and then think about what's the plan to do that. Maybe there are people who have been offended by whatever this behavior is. And maybe you go to them and say, you know what, I have been kind of an ornery kid. You know, I'm sullen when I shouldn't be. I've pouted about things that really I shouldn't, even if they're not fair. Or I've struck out in anger. I've gotten angry and I've done and said things I shouldn't. I have not been as pure both in what I do as well as what it looks like. I'm not careful enough and I'm going to do better. So you do that. That's always a good step to start that. Make a plan of action. It may be to study the issue further, if that would help. Find ways to eliminate the temptations, you know, upstream. Talk about that. Is that right? Upstream is this way for youth, right? Of the difficulty. Something triggers a bad behavior. Think about what it is that happens. And then discuss your commitment with someone who can help hold you accountable. These should not be a surprise. Don't just see these as, you know, hey, I'm just not as good as other people. This is, I hope these come from God's word and they're things that we want to do differently. And again, my goal is to help you think and do differently. I think a couple of minutes for just questions about anything, but I want to say a little bit at the end. Maybe any questions about the week or Janine, of course, anytime in private, we can talk about stuff.
Sorry, I went to the bathroom. I don't know if I covered this. But number 13, how do we know? Because
I know. I mentioned that. In fact, the earlier question was, is this what people see in us or is this what we see in ourselves? I'm trying to get you to fill it out for what you think you are, but it's hard to know. I suspect there are sometimes you actually know people are afraid to talk to you, but I think that's probably one of the ones you have to get some help on. Right. Good question. People tell me, in fact, when I was being considered to be an elder, I had a couple of the ladies, the women, who, by the way, are more spiritually minded generally than men anyway, it seems to me, come up and say, Marty, you know, you're intimidating. I'm like, what? What? Yeah, people, you look stern all the time. Is that true?
Yes.
No. It's not. But, I mean, they told me that. And by the way, I don't think it was easy for them to do that. But, man, what a blessing for one of these ladies to come up. And, of course, I didn't believe them. I told them they were crazy. No, I didn't say that. What do I need to do? What can I do? But that was amazing to me. And that's your question. Can it be true? I'm a wimp. You know that. Anyway. But see, I'm still defensive about it. I don't know. All right. Well, these are the qualities. Anything else?
Yeah. You mentioned several times your own insecurity. I observe that all men are. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, good question. I'll tell a story because I'm an old man. That's why old men think, you know, they think in stories. And I told somebody this earlier today, very, very insecure. I didn't really have the best home situation, right? My parents didn't get along, but they stayed together probably for our benefit. Oh, I was telling you the story. And so, don't give me the punchline before I...
I'll shut up.
And they didn't like each other. And so as soon as my sister, youngest kid, went off to college, my mom just left. And she'd been planning that for years. She was looking forward to that day. And as a result, I saw all the flaws in my dad and mom. And I felt, well, that's me. I'm living that out. I'm going to be just like that. I'm going to make some woman's life miserable, you know, one day. You know what I mean? Talk about an insecurity. And, you know, there were some wonderful girls that, you know, they might have been interested in, despite how unapproachable I am. That's not bad. And I finally, late, really, long after I probably should have made the decision, I just finally said, you know, this is just a matter of faith and trusting God to say, no, you can do this. That's, and maybe that doesn't answer the question fully, but if there is a place in your life where, I mean, I have always had the, I'm not confessing this to you guys, right? I don't want anybody mentioning this outside of me. But you know what the imposter syndrome is?
Yes.
You know, you get the job and you think, I'm not qualified. Why don't you pick me? I'm going to fail. You know, all that. I've always felt that way. And I think maybe my relationship with my dad had something to do with that. I'm not going to be psychoanalytical. But it's just an act of faith. And I finally said, this girl, right? Jay Zan, I couldn't pick a better one. I got to trust God and do it. Just do it. I got to get it. And at some point, there is this kind of like, okay, hold your nose and jump in and trust God. There's a plan He has in mind. And I've noticed in guys' lives that they come from bad homes. One or two things happen. And you probably see this too. Either they recreate that situation, almost like a duplicate, you know, carbon copy, old timey. Or they get so angry about it that they say, that is not going to happen to me. And they fight against it the whole way. And they direct kind of their creativity and everything to kind of go the opposite direction. Sometimes even too far. But they're just not going to let that happen in their life. I don't know. Maybe there's some wisdom in that too. Whatever it is we're afraid of, okay, take it on by faith. Figure out what makes you uncomfortable. Yeah. Yeah, so being a man, I mean, first of all, being insecure is like a threat to your manliness. I don't know. I can keep going on and on, but, you know, so you don't admit it. You know, anyway, sorry.
I think it's helpful. I think it's helpful for kids to realize we all feel it.
All the time.
Exactly.
This class scares me to death. Did you tell I over-prepared for this class?
No.
Yeah.
I wonder why.
Yeah.
With insecurity, I struggle with thinking about it because in some ways it's good. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, feeling like I am not enough. I need something. So what's the difference in the good and the bad and insecure?
Yeah. I think you maybe see it in the expression. Does it result in inactivity, like me, right? Or does it finally result in getting help, gaining strength, or finding some way to you know, just take the plunge by faith in the sense of trust faith. Yeah, I don't know. I got a good answer for this. I do want to get to my last little statement, but go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, what's really helped me with insecurity is just ultimately, you always want to be better and do your best, but just you just got to be honest with yourself and say, I have a limit. You know, this might be my limit, and if it's not as good as I would like, I accept that that's the way God created me to be, and, you know,
you know what thought I often have is kind of like that, is how bad can it be, and it's going to be over soon. That helps me a lot. I mean, maybe I'm about to mess this up really bad, but I mean, in terms of eternity, how bad can it be, and it's going to be over soon. Maybe that way. Like you can.
So something I was just thinking about when it comes to insecurities. And in Scott's class, we were talking about pride, and then we were talking about being self-focused. There's a point where you can think too highly of yourself, and obviously that's wrong. But then there's a point where you can think like way too little of yourself.
And you don't do that.
Right. And so like he was saying, that's bad too. That's not like a good thing to do that. because you're still being self-focused.
That's right.
So there is a balance.
And I think the answer is not just to sit there in activity. You start working on something. Take an initiative. Take a small step. Something. Okay, here's my ending thing. I want you to know that I have 9 grandkids, right? But 3 of them are adopted. I don't know if people are adopted here or you have adopted kids in your family. You know how adoptions work. And that is, there's a mom. We call them, I think, the biological mom or something, you know, as if there were other kinds of things. I mean, they're the biological parent. And that mom is not capable or in some way less qualified to rear that child than somebody else in the world. So 2 of my sons, have 3 kids, and they are, I'm just telling you, they're better parents than that mom would have been, right? And I think that biological mom knew that. And when she gave that child up, she knew there need to be better parents in this world for this child that I love than me. And I need to hand them over to those better parents. You'll know that. I mean, and in watching the adoption process, I've gained a lot more, understanding and certainly sympathy for these biological moms. Because however much they made the mistakes or however they got... I mean, that's a tough decision to say, I'm going to hand this child over to better parents than I am. We talked a lot this week about how fathers are imperfect, right? I have an idea that y'all are not going to be perfect fathers. And there's another way to look at that. And that is, we are just the biological parents of kids that we want to deliver to better parents than we are. And someday, and maybe it's 30 years from now, and you have these kids and so on. Someday, you're going to say, yep, I did the best I could, but I'm not the best parent. You need to be handed off to this better parent. That's really the goal, isn't it? It's not to have perfect kids or perfect parents. We want to try to do that. But in the end, I want them to be adopted by the real parent, by the real dad and mom. We call it adoption, but I think there's a greater reality to that than our own. But that's what we're as a fleshly father. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Thank you.